Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design, the podcast that dives deep into the heart of thriving through pregnancy, birth, and beyond. If you aspire towards exceptional parenthood and are looking to navigate the joys and challenges of raising children in our fast-paced world, you've found your tribe. I'm Philippa Scott and...
I'm Philippa Cox. Together we're Philippa Squared. Unpacking the real talk on modern parenting, peeling back the layers of its complexity from pregnancy and birth to the adventures beyond. This podcast is your guide to unraveling the nuances of parenting in today's world.
And we're keeping it real, sharing stories and having conversations with insightful guests, giving you clarity and direction on your parenting journey.
This is where your adventure begins. Transforming the challenge into a journey of wonder and joy, where you discover ways to craft your own parenthood map, not just follow the one handed down to you.
So settle in, get comfy, and let's laugh, learn, and grow into the parent you aspire to be. Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design.
Jenna Mitchell is a North Carolina native who spends most of her time as a stay-at-home mum of four young kids. Jenna's freelance career took off thanks to the popularity of her parenting blog and Instagram account. Her writings cover a range of topics, including local family-friendly events, advice for traveling with kids, parenting tips, wellness information, exercise, and essentialism for parents, especially mothers. Jenna and her family exemplify the success of the lifestyle detailed in her upcoming book, Let's Be Less, having embraced it for the past 6 years. An avid reader, Jenna has devoured hundreds of books on parenting, essentialism, minimalism, and conscious living since starting her journey to create Let's Be Less. She's done the hard work of sifting through the vast amount of information so her readers don't have to. By compiling the most valuable advice, Jenna provides young mothers with reliable guidance on parenting without the need to wade through misinformation. When Jenna isn't chasing after her kids or writing at her computer, you'll most likely find her at the gym enjoying the outdoors or curled up with a good book. We hope you enjoy today's edition of Philippa Squared Parenting by Design.
Hello and welcome to Philippa Squared Parenting by Design. You're joining me, Philippa Scott, and my beautiful co-host, Pippa Cox. Good morning, Pippa.
Hello, Philippa. Good to see you on this really wet morning.
Oh, it's gross out there, but we do need the rain, so we'll take it. And we have with us today the beautiful Jenna Michael. I can't even use my words. I haven't had a coffee yet, people. So. Jenna Michael is from North Carolina. She's a mum and an author, and she's here to share with us some of her insights as a mum of four, all under eight. Is that right, Jenna?
That is right. And thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here with you guys.
So tell us your story. How did you get to be doing the work that you're doing now?
Gosh, I think for me, my story probably is very similar to how a majority of moms begin parenting. I, you know, was really, really into babysitting as a teenager. I'm the oldest sibling. I was ready to have babies. I was so pumped. And I read all these books and I read all the blogs and I listened to the podcast and I had my first baby and I realized I was completely unprepared. I had no idea what I was doing. And I continued to pursue that for a very long time until I read a book on essentialism. And that basically taught me about simplifying things. And I looked around my room where I was reading and I was surrounded by toys and I was like, this could work. I could use this. And so I started implementing these ideas slowly but surely into our daily lives. And it transferred not only from toys, but to the kitchen, to our closets, and then even further into our value systems and our ideals. And so it kind of snowballed from there. But yeah, it started just like everybody else does of trying to figure out how the heck you're going to raise a human being.
I love that. I love that you talked straight away about your values and ideals as a parent.
it is such an important place to start. And I sometimes get parents who look at my parenting course and they're like, but I just want to know how to handle my two-year-old's tantrums. Yeah, I get that. But the first module is about values and intentions, because that's the stuff that's going to keep you on track later on in the program when you're figuring out how you want to deal with all of those things. It all comes back to those values and intentions. So I love that you brought that up. So tell me about, you know, you're working on a journey of less is more. Is that right? Talk to me about that.
Yes. Oh, I mean, it's one of those things that you will never arrive, because there's always more to do. And you can look at that in the most positive way, right? You're constantly getting to pursue this idea. And less is more is basically talking about that we as human beings often complicate things more so than they need to be. We add extra to everything. And that's especially the case with parenting. So my hope and my thought is that if we could look at parenting and choose to do less and have that less be better, higher quality, whatever it is that we're doing, we will actually be saying yes to the things that are most important to us while eliminating all the excess that doesn't. So basically focusing in on the most quality parts of it and not letting the noise overwhelm the rest of our daily lives.
This is so important, isn't it? Because in today's society, we just have to turn on the television or on the computer and we're bombarded by advertising, bombarded about with all the things that we really think we need. Mm-hmm. But do we actually? I mean, when you look at it, and the really great way to look at it, like I've looked at it in the past, is when I go away for a while and you pack up your house and you go traveling for, say, a year. You're living out of your backpack for a year. This is way back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. And then you realize when you come back and you open up your house that you don't need most of what's in there. And that's just the physical stuff, let alone the emotional stuff and the spiritual stuff. Mm-hmm. So I love that. So tell me more about that. I find that really interesting, Jenna. How has it impacted your life?
It's changed everything for us. And when I say everything, I'm not exaggerating. It started for us very simply with toys in our playroom. And it started because, honestly, I was so overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that our kids were playing with. And they were too young to be able to be responsible for it on their own, right? Like every puzzle was mixed together. And that's just like giving me anxiety within our home. And my husband was like, what if we just had less? And then there'd be less things to put away. There'd be less things to have to clean up. What if we did less laundry? And I'm like, dude, you're crazy. That's just not possible. He's like, how about this? So what we did was we went through area by area in our home, and we started with the physical things, and then we went to the non-tangibles later. And I think that that's a really helpful way to do it, because when you start with the physical things, you can see those results sooner and they're less scary, right? If you're talking about, okay, we only need this many number of books, instead of trying to convince your great aunt that you're not going to be coming to Thanksgiving, like that's a lot. That's a whole other topic that's more complicated. So we started with physical items. We went room by room. And a lot of the things, what we did was we just put them away at first, and we set a time frame. We said, you know what, if we don't touch this in a year, it's probably something we don't need to have in our home. And that continued to progress. And we started looking at what was coming into our home differently as well. We were very, very intentional about what we spend our money on and what we bring into our home. Everything needs to have a place to be stored. And as we continued to do that, we saw, you know, maybe we could do this with our calendar too. Like maybe we don't need to have all of these activities on our schedule. And me being me, I'm like, no, we have to have all of those. Like we really need to. We really need to have soccer and dance and swim for a three-year-old. Like she needs to do all of it. And it was like, well, let's just try and see what happens. And then when you take some of that away, you realize, well, we didn't we didn't actually need all of them. And now we have more time to read books or to play outside or to just be kid. And so it changed the way that our household functioned just from a physical item standpoint. And then it's broached into things like I changed jobs and we switched churches. We started homeschooling our kids. Gosh, we could go really into it. I had unmedicated births. Like I changed the way that I birthed our kids after we started this. So it trickled through all different aspects of our life. It's been really amazing how that's happened.
Yeah,
beautiful. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And one of the things, one of the arguments with creating a more simplistic life, particularly with what you were talking about, with your kids going to soccer on Monday, dance on Tuesday, swimming on Wednesday, and something else on Thursday, is that one of the arguments is, but I need my kids to experience all of these things. That's one of the arguments. How do you respond to that? Because you've listened.
I think they can. Yeah, I think they can. But they don't necessarily need to do all of them at once, right? So you can say, hey, you know what? In the spring, we play soccer. In the summer, we do swim lessons. In the fall, we do gymnastics classes. And then you can kind of cut your seasons and have an activity for a season. And you can concentrate on something for that time frame. And they can still experience all of that. But at the same time, you also have time to be a family. You have the ability to not rush everywhere. If you have more than one kid, this just adds up. It really does. And it creates such a sense of urgency and chaos to your evenings, right? That doesn't need to be there. And frankly, if I'm being honest, I think it takes the joy out of some of these activities. Because when you're stressed, your kids feel that stress too. So being able to say, you know what? Every kid gets one activity. And then if we want to switch it up after the season, that's fine. And if you want to stick with this activity, then we can do that too. But being able to just focus on one at a time is super helpful.
I kind of like that. And particularly when kids are above 5 years old, when they can actually make their own decisions according to what mm-hmm. they really like, it gives them responsibility. Like, oh, I'm going to try this out. I'll see what this is like. And then if they love it, then they can continue on, but not, oh, let's try something else.
Right, exactly.
When you have...
Yeah, I love that. Children. What were you saying, Philippa?
I was just going to say, you know, I would have all of my children do the same activity each each time they did one too. You know, everybody went together because I'm not going all over town. I can't split myself four ways to do that. And my husband and I both, you know, worked or had businesses to run. And so, you know, you can't be everywhere all at once. And I remember as, you know, growing up, I had a very eclectic upbringing. So, you know, my parents were ministers, but then by the time I was 10, we were traveling around America in a motorhome for a year. And then we came back and we lived in a, you know, we made a new motorhome for 9 months and then went back to America and lived in it for a year. And so we didn't have stuff. We didn't have regular activities. We were always doing something, but I wasn't in all of these lessons. And did I get back to high school and go, well, I don't play a sport? Not real sporty. Yep. Didn't really matter. I don't care for it, especially. I played hockey for a while. But anyway, we didn't have any of that. We didn't have stuff because we were in a motorhome with three kids and two adults, and there wasn't room for stuff. So we lived in a very peeled back life. And I found one of the interesting things that I guess I noticed in my own early parenting journey. So we lived in a very tiny little house up until I was pregnant with number four. And when I say tiny, it was really tiny. Then we moved to this massive, great big house in time for me to have baby number four. And there was all this room. And, you know, space has a way of filling. And when we have our own trauma and our own stuff, we tend to fill our life with the stuff, with the things that we think we need to, because we can't handle all this space around us because that doesn't feel comfortable. It's not safe. And so I noticed that for myself. And then we packed up and we moved and we had to cull a lot. And we did. We culled a lot. And then from that point, we were in a house for 2 years. And then we moved overseas with four kids, and we had to pack up and we moved eight times in 5 years with four kids twice overseas. It's a really great way to learn how to cull and get rid of stuff, right? But it's amazing how much stuff we still had that we actually didn't need. And it's been a real process of letting go of that stuff. And when I did my own trauma work, it almost became that stuff was a reminder or a signal of where I was then. And so it became much easier to just get rid of it. But we have these things around us to make us feel like we're doing the right thing, or if we take our children to all of these activities, we tell ourselves it's to keep them out of trouble, particularly as they get older, right? We've got to keep our teens out of trouble, keep them busy, make sure that they get home tired so that they go to sleep and they're not thinking about sneaking out and all this sort of stuff. So once your kids get to teens, there's this whole other layer of wanting to try and keep them busy and in the community and all that sort of stuff. And so we tend to do that. But it's really about us, I think, personally, when we fill our children's lives with things, when we fill our children's lives with activities, it's the easiest way for us to show love when we're not capable of sitting in the emotional space with our children because it's not comfortable, we're not ready, we're triggered, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And also with children, by not allowing them to be by themselves and actually getting to know themselves, know who they are inside by self-discovery, self-play, play with others, play with problem solving. It's a way so that we really establish our problem solving capabilities as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is slowly and surely just being destroyed as well.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts there, Jenna, around the idea that we fill our children's lives with stuff and things and activities because we are not able to sit in that space with them?
Oh, I think you're spot on. I really do. I think there's this idea that in order to be a good parent, you need to provide in excess for your child. I mean, think about just the way that we're advertised to for a holiday or a birthday, right? Or a celebration of any kind. And really, and this is a major, major part of the book that I've written, the most important thing in your child's life is you, right? You are the best, or like the best thing that is in their life. And so whether it's time, it's attention, it's instruction, there are things that you can provide that no toy, no playroom, no activity will ever be able to make up for. And so that gets into uncomfortable space for a lot of parents, right? And that's also a problem because we need to provide, we need to put food on the table, you know, you've got to work, you have to eat, you need to be able to make it to your job every day. And so our pockets to be able to spend that time to fill those voids of the need to be able to just provide physical items get smaller and smaller. And so in some ways, we just kind of scooted them off to the side and replaced that with, well, I got you a new doll, or I got you a new puzzle, or I got you a new book, or whatever it is, instead of sitting with them when it might be a little bit uncomfortable. So I think you're just absolutely spot on. That was a hard thing to be able to wrestle with.
Oh, absolutely, because it speaks to the heart of who we are and how we parent, right? Like, and this, yes, this is the idea of this podcast, though, people, right, is that we have the real conversations and we say the real words that we need to hear. You know, sometimes we need to hear that we might have some work to do. And we talk about this all the time, don't we, people, the idea that, you know, do the work on you, because what you're, and you hit the nail on the head, Jenny, what you're showing up with and your greatest asset in parenting is yourself. So why wouldn't you spend the time and the effort to be the best you can be, so your kids get the best version of you that they can get? That's the real present. That's the real thing you should be spending money and time on, is making sure you're the best version of you so that your kids get the best version of you. That's where the gold is, you know?
Yeah.
And it is hard to hear. It's totally hard to hear.
Yeah. Because our children, you know, before we're what, between 5 and 7, we're like gigantic sponges. Our brain is developing in ways that is unprecedented in the rest of the time of our lives. And so the people that we're looking at are role models. Our parents, they're role models. Every single thing that we say, every single thing that we do is being observed and being taken in. So it's massive. It's a huge responsibility. So why not just spend time?
I think we, you know, I notice it in the parents that I work with, how often they feel the need to be busy all the time themselves. And that comes from their own experience of being parented. And it comes out then in this workaholism that they themselves don't feel like they are enough unless they are busy all the time, or then they're not good enough if they're not doing all the time. And so they can't just sit in being relaxed and being calm. They need to be doing all the time. And that's the fallout of doing all those things for our children, or having our children be doing lots of things all the time, is that we're actually setting them up for core beliefs that say, unless I am active, or my worth comes from my activity, my worth comes from how much I'm doing. And that's setting our kids up to have long-term mental health issues.
That is a really good point.
But yes, I think there's a busyness crisis that's happening with parents right now, where we feel that our worth comes from not only providing physical items and toys and junk for our kids, but also in being busy and justifying that busyness. That who am I to sit on the couch on a Sunday afternoon and watch a movie with my kids? Like, I'm supposed to be doing all the things. I'm supposed to have a fancy house that looks a certain way and provide for my family and go to work on Monday and have healthy food in the fridge. And so you're constantly upping the ante in your brain, as well as just in social pressure around you. And it's a busyness crisis where, you know, if you ever talk to somebody and you're like, hey, how are you? And they're like, oh, I'm busy. Like, people respond with that all the time. And you're like, that's not how you are. That's what you're doing, but that's what you think you should be doing. But in doing some of these things, we're missing out on some of the joys, right? They say that the majority of your learning, you never learn more than you do in the first few years of your life, right? Your learning capacity is just exponential when you're young. And if you think about a child's brain as a house, that's when the foundation is being poured, right? And when you're building a house, if you don't have a strong foundation, then eventually somewhere down the line, there will be a crack in the wall. There will be a window that's askew. There will be something that isn't all the way right. And that's because there isn't enough underneath to be able to support it. So in the young child ages, I know that this is not the way that everybody can live their lives, but whatever you could do to pursue as much quality time with your kids and the least amount of extra things, right? Just focusing on the most important, the quality things instead of the quantity things, you will pour a very strong foundation for your children that will only continue to be stronger as they get older, is my hope.
Mm-hmm. Boom.
Yeah.
Boom. Exactly. Because we're also talking about this busyness. And it's not just parents who are busy. It is a social reality these days. It is
like so social
real.
Badge. Yeah.
Like it is.
Take pride in it. Yeah.
And as you guys said, we get our worth from how busy we are. If we're busy, we're productive. If we're productive, we're worthy. I find that really, really fascinating, instead of the quality of what you're talking about.
It's interesting. So, I did a course recently with a coach and a chiropractor together, and it was called Thriving with Duality. And it was really interesting because this particular coach had done my work, and she was like always in the busy, always there, stuck in the chaos, not the calm. And it was really interesting because during this course, they asked us all to physically get up and stand. What category are you in? Are you in chaos? Are you in calm? And she was able to, for the first time in her life, sit in the calm space and feel really good about that. And and it was interesting because for me, I'm in chaos right now. I am on a mission. I am on a mission to change the world. And so I've got lots of activity going on. So I am busy right now. And the question was, where do you want to stay where you are? Is where you are where you're choosing to be right now? And I had to say, yes, this is where I want to be right now. The chaos is the phase of life that I'm in right now. There are elements of calm, and I know when to sit in that calm to reset. But that my calm is coming. Right now I'm in the chaos, and that's okay, but I don't have young children. I don't have, you know, my children are teens, and so they gift me with their presence when they want to, right? And I try to be as present as I possibly can when they choose to gift me with their presence, which comes so randomly. You never know when it's going to happen. But so I it's not about the idea that busyness isn't okay.
Right.
But it's about being able to choose and know that there are going to be times when we can be busy. We also need to be in the calm, and we need to be able to be very thoughtful about that. We it needs to be intentional. Okay, yeah, I'm going to be busy for this period, this week, or during my work day, or whatever it might be, but so that I can then choose to have this space and calm in these moments of my life. So I think we can strike a balance, and we can be intentional about how and when we have calm and chaos. And we're absolutely right in that first 7 years from utero right through to seven, they are a sponge, and they are laying down the unconscious beliefs that are going to dictate the patterns for the rest of their life. So we want to get that right. We actually want to be feeding into them by modeling, because remember, we can tell them anything, but unless we are showing them and we are treating ourselves the way that we want them to treat themselves, they're only going to see what we do. They're going to see what we do more than what we tell them they should do, right? So, you know, being able to show up in those moments and yes, have a work ethic and get things done, that's really valuable, but also know when it's time to rest and be calm and just chill out together is also really
important. It's a really amazing thing. And I discovered this again through Qigong and through meditation, through yoga and all that stuff, is that you only need 5 minutes in your day to completely regulate that nervous system once you get into it. 5 minutes a day to center yourself. And that doesn't take long. 5 minutes. And the more you do it, the quicker and the more effective it is. Just let your girls know.
It can feel like when you're wrapped around children, though, it can feel like even having 5 minutes in the day is impossible.
It's huge. Massive. But if you have the intention, if you have the intention, is it impossible if you have an intention?
No. It can just feel like it.
Yeah.
But this is a really good point to be able to talk about how this is where your value system can be so helpful. Because this is where you can say, this is the chaos that I choose to be able to have in our lives, because this is what's really important to us, versus I'm just completely out of control and I have no idea what's going on. So being really purposeful in the choices that you make in the chaos that you introduce. I mean, I have 4 kids, right? Like, my house is definitely chaos all the time, but it's purposeful chaos in a lot of ways, which is just beautiful and wonderful.
Oh. Jenny, in amongst that chaos, because 4 kids under 8, that's massive. How are you feeling in amongst that chaos, knowing that you've done the work that you've done? How are you feeling on a day-to-day basis with that? Are you feeling stressed? Are you feeling in flow? Are you feeling tired? Are you feeling that you can handle it? How are you feeling? What's your base, your foundation?
All of it. I think more than anything, I feel gratitude. I feel immensely blessed with the fact that I have these four human beings that I get to be related to that are ours. And that just over and over again, like my kids were sitting on our deck eating dinner, and I look through the kitchen window and I see my four beautiful children sitting at a table together, having a conversation, eating dinner. And I'm like, wow, that is a massive blessing. Like I feel an immense amount of gratitude. I also feel stressed sometimes, especially when they're sick. That's really hard. And sometimes I'm very overstimulated, right? When four people are asking you things at once, it can be a lot. But at the same time, I wouldn't trade any of it for anything different. I mean, it's the most incredible blessing for sure. But also in flow, I think that's a great thing now. Like I would say flow is a really, really good term for it. And part of it is because with being so intentional and purposeful, we've set up really, really intentional boundaries. We're really, really aware of what we can and cannot do within our days. And when our days start to get too packed, or when our weeks are just a little too crazy, we look at it and we can identify how that's going to make us feel and anticipate it more than just going along for the ride and getting swept up in the storm and trying to climb your way out of it. Because in the midst of all the other chaos that happens with just trying to keep four human beings alive, that can be a very challenging thing to do.
Yeah. And I loved what you were talking about with intention. It's about creating a life and parenting by design, isn't it? Rather than by default. It's about being self-aware, knowing that you've got this unconscious orchestra in the back that is creating your life that you don't realize that is happening. Is this what our podcast is all about, Philippa?
It so is.
I love it. Thank you for highlighting this, Jenna. It's awesome.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is. There's just so much noise. The world is full of noise. And as a parent, a lot of times your job is to figure out what noise you need to filter out and what noise you need to listen to. And so it's
this. Love it. And your values, like what we've said before, Philippa, like values mark very, very deeply in both of our programs, because by knowing our values, it's sort of a bridge into knowing us and what decisions guiding us. That's true to our unconscious beliefs and our unconscious way of being. Boom. Love it.
A value system offers you a default decision-making process that you don't realize at the time, right? I mean, if you are somebody who loves to kayak, then it's probably a great thing to have a kayak at your house or in your garage or a car that can transport your kayak. I'm not a kayaker, so this is probably a really bad example. But I know nothing about kayaks, so I shouldn't own one, right? Kayaks are not my thing. And I'm aware of that. And so obviously this is the upper level decision-making process, but it goes to things like birthday parties or gift giving or physical items in your home or being able to know what kind of schooling you want your children to have, right? Are you going to go a traditional or a private or a homeschool route? Like these are all decisions that you can make for your family easy.
We lost you.
We lost you, Jenna.
Say that bit again.
Values.
Oh, now you're back. Yep.
No.
Okay, is this any better?
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Okay, sorry.
It's fine.
We'll cut it out. Oh, sorry, Philippa will.
I'm sorry. I think my AirPods died. I apologize. But no, so your decision making is a default, your values are a default decision making process. You totally botched that part.
No, but it's entirely true. When you are making a decision based on your values, it's like I say to people, you know, if one of your values is honesty, then in November, you're not telling your children that they need to be good in order to get presents from Santa, right? Mm. Like, mm-hmm. because that's not in line with your values. When I give gifts in this house, my kids all know they're probably going to get it in whatever bag I got from the shops, right? Because I have an ethics around environmental. I don't like waste. Yes, on Christmas Day, we wrap all the presents. Well, the kids do. They wrap each other's presents because they like wrapping. I really don't care for it.
I don't either.
It's not my thing. So they'll wrap each other's presents and they love it, right? The beautiful thing about autistic children is they'll get fixated on doing something like that and they'll have a ball. So great, go for it. But on their birthdays and so on, nothing gets wrapped because they're only going to rip the paper and it doesn't make sense. If I went shopping and put it in a bag, that's the bag they can pull it out of because they can't see it through the bag. It's the same as having paper, right? So that aligns with my values. And so that's what we do. Now, for some people, that might seem horrific, but that's how I brought my children up, to not waste paper on a present, because what's the point? And if you think about it long and hard enough, what is the point?
Mm. Oh, come on. It's pretty paper.
Sure. But what's the point?
And you pay a lot of money for it.
You do. And you're chopping down trees or whatever, right? Like it doesn't, you know, what is your value system? I don't let my children, I've had kids go to parties before where they all, you know, do a balloon and they put a message in the balloon and then they let the balloon off into the atmosphere. That's littering. I'm sorry, but we're not doing that, right? I'm actually not okay with that. It's polluting the earth, and I'm not good with that. So we're not doing it. And so my kids know that we're, you know, that my values are going to create yeses and nos in our lives.
And the really good thing about knowing your values as well is that it makes decision making so much easier. When you're not really sure of which way to go, you just sort of take a step back and really align with how you're feeling. Is it a light feeling or is it a heavy feeling? How does it fit with my values? And it makes it so much easier.
It also helps you identify your authentic self. And that's such a hard thing to do right now in today's world, because we're constantly told we need to be in a particular mold. And it's from a beginning of life, right? Because we read the baby book and the baby book says, oh, well, you're supposed to have your child nap at this time and this time and this time and consume this many ounces of milk. But like no baby can fit inside of a book, right? And no person can fit inside of a mold. We're all individuals. And so identifying and knowing your value system helps you to be able to stick to your authentic self more than you would otherwise, because it's really hard to do it regardless. But when you can stand up and say, well, no, this is important to me. I really value this. This is me. Take me or leave me. It makes it a little bit easier.
It totally does. It makes life so much easier. Love it. Mm-hmm. Love it. Yeah.
And that authenticity, while we're talking about that, you know, Gabor Maté talks about this idea of attachment and authenticity. So a lot of us don't know who we truly are. So a lot of people who are out there parenting right now won't have any idea of who they authentically are, because their conditioning as a child was or their attachment as a child was conditional. And so they had to mold who they were in order to maintain the secure connection they had with their parent. And that meant molding their behavior, molding their values, molding who they were to fit that in order to be acceptable. And then we do that in our schooling system. We do that all the way through a person's life. In order to be acceptable, they have to fit this mold. And so then we get parents who are out there desperately trying to, you know, help their children be authentic, but they don't know who they authentically are themselves. And so that's, again, where the work comes in, doing the work so that you get to find out who you authentically are, so that when you are bringing up these children, you can show them what authenticity looks like. And because you have a secure connection to your own authenticity, you're able to model that, and you're able to then give them that secure attachment that isn't conditional on them molding to who you think they should be in order to be acceptable, or who society thinks they should be in order to be acceptable. And that's where all this busyness comes from, you know, with our children particularly, this idea that I need to give them all of these things so that they fit the social mold. Well, what if they don't remember how to do the splits, you know, because they didn't go to gym, to gym? What if you teach them to swim at home, you know? Or you mean it's all actually about training you, right? Like, I learned how to teach my first daughter how to swim, and from that point on, I taught all the rest. I knew what to do. It's like training a dog, right? You only have to go for your first dog to puppy school. Once you know what to do, you can train the dog, a new dog each time, right? Because you've got the skills. And I will teach my granddaughter this summer how to swim, you know, because she'll be 18 months old. I'll teach her to swim. Because I taught all the others, I can teach her. And we don't need to keep outsourcing all of this stuff. We don't need to keep making it all super busy in order to fit some ideal that we're meant to do. Because we're not meant to do all those things. 100 years
we're meant to be.
Weren't a thing.
We're just meant to be.
Yeah.
We are just meant to be, and to have a life that is, has meaning for us.
Jenna, have you read Hunt Gather Parent by Michaeline Dukloff?
Oh my gosh, it's one of my favorite parenting books. Oh, I love it. I love it. I was literally just going to bring that up because it inspired me actually to, in a lot of different ways, but inspired me to look at the Industrial Revolution. Because the Industrial Revolution, to me, I'm actually reading a book about it right now. My sister is making fun of me. She was like, you're literally reading a textbook. And I was like, this is fascinating. The Industrial Revolution changed humanity and how we do most everything, right? But until then, like in Hunt Gather Parent, she proves we did things pretty similarly all the way throughout time. And the Industrial Revolution was not that long ago. So a lot of these ideas, the way that we've gotten so far away from what we used to do as far as parents, is still relatively new, right? It's the same idea as like obstetrics, right? That's a new idea. That didn't exist for a long time, right? Midwives delivered babies. Like, well, we can go on for that for sure. But yes, fabulous book. Absolutely have loved it.
Absolutely. So my degree is in sociology, right? So yeah. I look at all of these, and her book was fabulous in terms of bringing the sociological perspective on how we got to be where we are as parents, and look at the greater cultural things that happened that then created all of this. And I believe one of the beautiful things about the book is it does create an awareness of the fact that this, you know, we don't have to continue on this space. Once we understand where it comes from and why it's all there, we can look more objectively at what it is that we're doing. We can sit back and go, okay, well, if that's actually only a 50-year-old thing, or if that's only been happening for the last 100 years or 200 years, what might it look like if we actually don't take that on? What can we do as a culture or as a community to create change, to bring some of these things back, like like communities for mums, and having mums not be alone, having villages where they can commune and be together, you know? So there's a lot of things we can overcome and that we can change once we become aware of why it's currently where it's at and where that came from.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes.
Yep.
And I mean, what you said, I just think that that's, for me, in reading that book, there was this overwhelming sense of relief in that I am not special. And I mean that to say that women feel like we are so isolated right now. When we're raising kids, when we're at home, when we're by ourselves, when we're in the trenches, we feel so lonely at times. And this book in particular was an amazing reminder that women have been having babies and raising children. Well, families, I apologize. Families have been having babies and raising them for forever. And we're not alone. And so it was a huge relief to just feel that sense of community, because it can be so isolating when you're at home and when you're not aware of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we could probably go on and on forever. This has been a fabulous conversation.
As always.
What would you like? What one pearl would you like to leave our listeners with?
Ooh. I would just say to focus on what it is that's most important to you. Find that and hold on to it and let everything else filter through that. Just look and see what's most important. And then as you do that, you'll be able to eliminate a lot of the excess around the edges and have quality over quantity.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, I'm looking forward to your book, Jenna, and we will have some details for you in the show notes so that people can find you. And yeah, it would be lovely to continue to have conversations just like this. So folks, we really appreciate you listening. We hope that you'll follow and subscribe, and that you will share this with those that you know who need to have this kind of information, who would be blessed and their lives would be easier for having less in it. So thanks again, Jenna. Thank you, Pippa, for your wisdom and your calm in my chaos.
You're welcome, Pippa, and lovely to speak to you, Jenna. It was a really great conversation.
Thank you for having me. I